This is Artbeat, and I'm sure a lot of people listening like to engage in creative arts, not only as a way of self-expression, but also in a way of improving our own well-being. Arts engagement, whether it is creating or being part of the audience, can really impact on our mood and the ways that we see ourselves in the world. But when it comes to art therapy, is that enough? Should we be looking for something more from the art therapy that we engage in? Right now, we are joined by Michelle Saliba, who's going to talk to us a little bit about her experience in the art therapy world and share with people what they should be looking for in an art therapist. Michelle, welcome.
Hi, Beck. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's an absolute delight. Thank you so much. So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about your journey towards becoming a arts therapist.
Sure. Well, I'm actually a provisional psychologist, and I'm also a counsellor, and I've got art therapy in there as well. So a multidisciplinary approach to supporting people's health and well-being journeys. And it really started from my own experience of mental ill health. I have two children who are both young adults now, but when I had my first baby, I experienced postnatal depression, and I was linked in with a wonderful psychologist who really encouraged me to use arts engagement and art practice to support my own recovery and my recovery journey, and to bring that into our sessions and to help me to talk about what I was experiencing, what I was feeling, and the disappointment and the challenges and all of the stuff that was going on that was really complex and quite overwhelming. And that was my introduction to this idea that arts were something that could benefit recovery and healing and make us understand our experiences and provide us with an avenue to find meaning in our experiences, good and bad, and everything in between, that I hadn't really thought of before, that I hadn't known about before. And so that was how I got into it, from that actual experience. And from there, after a few years, I started hosting peer support groups. So I thought, well, if I've had this wonderful experience of integrating the arts into my recovery process, I'm sure there must be other people who would benefit. And there was a bit of a journey with that lived experience, peer support, and then I decided, you know what, I actually want to find out more about how to do this really effectively in a clinical, with clinical settings and populations, and take that next step. And I went back to study, and that's been an ongoing journey for a number of years.
When it comes to art therapy, there's a real distinction that happens between the use of art as therapy and the use of art in therapy. Can you explain a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, sure. And I think it's a term that's lingered around for, or those two different terms, or the distinction has lingered around for a little while. And generally speaking, art in therapy or art psychotherapy is a really specific process. The creative arts therapies, there's a number of different modalities that can be used, from drama to visual arts to music. There's a whole range of things. And ultimately, they're occurring within a clinical framing or a clinical setting. You've got measurement. You've got people who understand scope of practice. There's specific presentations and reasons that people are in that healthcare environment and engaging with the therapist. And so you want to make sure that the person that you're engaging with, whether it's someone with a standalone art therapy qualification or creative arts therapies qualification, has perhaps a master's level or more if you're in that space, or that you're working with a registered health professional such as a social worker or an occupational therapist or a psychologist who also has additional art therapy qualifications. Either of those types of professionals work, you know, they all work really well in that space, and there's lots of people integrating art therapy into other types of psychological interventions and practices. But what we're trying to do there by having this idea that there's a baseline of qualification is ensuring the safety of consumers and also ensuring the safety of the people delivering the service, because we understand that burnout and vicarious trauma can occur when we sit in those spaces with other people's helping other people in their challenges as well. Now, ours is... Oh, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I just wanted to go back to something you said a little earlier. I love this phrase, scope of practice, and I feel like maybe that kind of hits at the core of what you're talking about. So yeah. Scope of practice is really this idea that the person delivering the therapy or the therapeutic intervention has an understanding not only of what they do know, but what they don't know, and they understand not to step past that line between what they do know and what they don't.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant definition of scope of practice. That's exactly right. And that's going to keep everyone safe when we're able to recognise and reflect on what we don't know, and when someone's presentation might be a little bit too challenging for where we're at in our development or from our training.
So if you are someone who is looking to engage an arts therapist or someone who will use art when they're working with you in that mental health space, in that supportive kind of well-being psychological intervention space, then it's important to kind of look for someone who is going to be meeting your needs, and if they can't meet your needs, that they're going to be able to refer you on to someone else.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, Michelle... So, Michelle, I guess when we start talking about those kind of, like, knowing what you don't know areas, there are a lot of pseudoscientific or folk heritage beliefs that kind of still pop up every now and then when we're talking about art therapy. Can you tell us a bit about some of those and why they could possibly be damaging to the therapeutic process?
Yeah, sure. And I think, you know, that term art as therapy is probably one of those. I understand where it kind of, it serves a purpose, but if we're looking at a more, a broader idea of arts engagement, what we want to do is have an accessibility when we're using language. So we don't want to be setting up barriers. So that differentiation between clinical framing and non-clinical framing, and it's not super helpful to say art as therapy if we're talking about non-clinical settings and non-clinical framings, but we're using a word that denotes a clinical intervention. So arts engagement is much broader, and it's about, you know, not necessarily targeting those therapeutic outcomes. So that's just something for people to think about. I think as well, we often fall into this space of thinking about creativity or feeling that we can't engage with arts practices or creative interventions because there's that, you know, that left brain, right brain myth, mm-hmm. where we have that idea of brain-sidedness, right, around, you know, your listeners have probably heard of people refer to themselves as left-brained, logical, analytical, you should be an engineer, or right-brained, you know, creative, intuitive, artistic. And there's definitely evidence around hemispherical lateralization, or that there are certain parts of the brain that control certain functions.
Can you just say hemispherical?
Lateralization.
Yes, got it.
So that's all right, sorry. So this idea that, you know, there's one side of the brain, and as an example, let me give an example. So we know that language and language-related capabilities tend, for the majority of people, occur on the left side of the brain. So for the vast majority of people, the language center is located in the left side of the brain, and that directs our capacity with language-related functions. So certain functions are located on one side or the other, but in general, most people use both sides of their brains equally. What we're talking about, so that's kind of not disputed that there's parts. And we can see that, you know, people who've had a stroke or a brain injury, they might experience deficit in certain functionality depending on where the injury to the brain has occurred. But what we're talking about here is this idea of brain-sidedness, which is not equal to those kind of really fixed functions. So we're talking about things such as personality type or traits or preferences. So as I said, that idea of left brain being good at numbers, right brain being intuitive. On average, we use both hemispheres equally. And when we're specifically talking about creativity, it's no more processed in one hemisphere over the other. So what we don't want is to promote an idea that creativity or arts engagement is accessible to some people because of, you know, they're just born that way and not to others.
Mm.
I think that's where it kind of can get in the way.
So even if people are sitting there thinking, well, I'm not really a creative person, I don't see how this is going to help me, maybe it's also about challenging those assumptions that you're making about yourself and
Absolutely.
What you're good at or what you're not good at.
So challenging those assumptions, but also challenging the way we define the arts and really broadening out our definition of what the arts and what arts engagement can look like for people. I think sometimes we get very narrow, and even the use of the term art therapy rather than saying creative arts therapies, plural, right? There's so many ways that we can engage creatively with health, well-being, and specifically clinical healing, that we don't need to be narrow, and that means there's something for everyone. So if we take this kind of broad, generalist idea of arts engagement rather than a really narrow, specific space, then we make it really accessible for people. There's something for everyone in that space.
And recognising that arts engagement in itself is so important for our ongoing well-being and is a part of the reason why we need to continue to advocate for appropriate funding of arts programs in WA.
Absolutely.
As well. Just to segue into a popular rant of mine, Michelle, thank you so much for the time that you've given us today on ArtBeat.
You're really welcome back. It was good fun talking to you.
Michelle Saliba is a provisional psychologist. That means that she is just waiting on the old approval to be a clinical psychologist. She's got to go through a bit of supervision first. She's a therapeutic arts practitioner and an artist working out of Fremantle. Michelle, again, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great long weekend.
Excellent. You too, Beck. It was a pleasure. Take care.